Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In just 5 months now, the city of Athens will host 1.5 million visitors, spectators, reporters, and the world's greatest athletes for the 2004 Summer Olympics. The ancient home of the Olympics Games has taken a lot of flack for its slow pace of preparation for this year's games. Now the time for advanced preparation is gone, and there is still much to be completed. Stadium roofs, rail lines, and a sprawling security system. In a jittery post-9/11 world, in the wake of bombings in Istanbul and last week in Madrid, Olympic security is a top priority and daunting challenge this summer. Greek officials have put in a special request to NATO for additional help. The U.S. military has a big warm-up drill dubbed Shield of Hercules going on with 400 U.S. troops taking part. A whopping $850 million has been earmarked for security alone, three times the budget for the last Summer Olympics in Sydney, and the largest amount ever spent on security for the Games. Tonight on Point, we are racing toward the Olympics, and it's a little scary. Will the Greeks be ready for the Games? Will the cement be dry? Will the athletes be safe? Can Athens pull it off? And what kind of reception awaits American athletes this year at this ultimate global event? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Berkeley, California, is Trent Gigax, correspondent for Newsweek magazine. His article in this week's issue is Security Anything is a Target. He reported on the bombing at the Atlanta Summer Olympics and on the security at the Salt Lake City Winter Olympics. Good evening and welcome, Trent Gigax.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. Trent, thanks for joining us. Give us a quick peek, if you would, at preparation for security in Athens. How's it going? What kind of measures are on the drawing board? What's already up and running?
What's already up is stationing, I guess the most obvious indication of security will be police. Every 10 meters or so downtown, you'll have, the numbers are astounding here, 100,000 forces throughout the country that will be keeping an eye on things. There will be a virtual police state. I think, in fact, people will be pleased to see that. You'll have AWACS circling up from above, radar eyes in the sky, and you'll have blimps keeping an eye on things as well. And since Madrid, they're hustling on changes in the light rail and the subway system as well.
Trent, describe for us the security challenge with Athens and the Greek Games.
Well, you've got a country that is a part of the EU, so if somebody enters anywhere in the European Union, they can make their way to Greece. It's close to a lot of international hotspots, of course, Israel and Iraq. You also have the Balkans just north there, and there are terrorist organizations all around these places. And then you have, of course, the sea. It's surrounded by coastline. And the security apparatus includes things like echolocation devices, which will help authorities through the use of sonar technology detect something as minuscule as a suicide swimmer.
Because one of the scenarios that we've heard described is fear of a ship or a boat being hijacked in the harbor. The harbor's critical to the supply lines to Athens.
That's right. You can envision a scenario where even without killing somebody, the terrorists would be able to shut the games down by hitting a subway line simultaneously with an explosion anywhere in the harbor. And the harbor, if the harbor shut down and the subway shut down, the whole city shut down.
Now, right now, there are 400 U.S. troops, we're told, in the Aegean Sea, just off Greece, or perhaps on Greece land proper, in a kind of war game or something called Shield of Hercules. What's going on?
Yeah, that's called Hercules Shield 2004. It's a joint U.S.-Greek military exercise. There are a couple of NATO countries involved as well, and they're going through terror scenarios such as what we saw happen in Madrid. There's also chemical weapons attacks drills that they're going through, and they're also going through.
Hello, Trent, are you there? Sounds like I may have lost Trent Gigax. He's joined us from Berkeley, California. We'll get him back in just a moment. He's a correspondent for Newsweek magazine. I am accompanied right here in the studio with no mechanical possibility of risk now by John Powers. He's a sports reporter for the Boston Globe. He's covered the Olympics since 1976. He's been in Athens looking at their preparations for the Games. John Powers, it's great to have you here tonight.
Oh, thank you.
There's a lot to talk about with preparations for this game, but maybe you can pick up on a couple of the security angles we were just talking about with Trent. Some athletes at these games, we read, are going to be more closely protected than others, including U.S. athletes, if I read this correctly, who are going to be accompanied to their events by gun-toting bodyguards.
That's right. I know that they have identified certain countries and certain athletes in certain countries that are going to be much more highly visible, let's say. The U.S. is going to have some of their own security people. They've been a little bit hush-hush about who it will be. Clearly, they don't want to be telling people, but this is nothing new for the Americans. Clearly, in the last Olympic Games, right after 9/11, mm-hmm. there was a very high awareness there.
Salt Lake City, all kinds of security measures taken.
Right, and I think now what the issue is how can we not just protect the athletes, but when you're moving them from place to place, the Olympic Village is outside the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly remote, hard to get to. It'll be easy to protect them while they're there. The question is, when they're on a bus going across the city, going to play basketball, what happens then? And I think that is the biggest issue at any Olympics is transportation, not just for athletes, but for spectators.
Now, as you say, though, John, security ever since Munich has been an issue. And this isn't the first Olympics, so it's the first Summer Olympics since 9/11. Sydney also had major security measures that were taken. What's your sense running up to these Olympics? Are the athletes, the coaches, the organizers, with the bombings in Istanbul and Madrid and ongoing war in Iraq, are they freaking out, or are they taking this in stride and saying this is just the world we live in?
I think most now accept that this is the world that they live in, and they believe that they will be made as safe as they can be. The issue, I think, is not so much for the athletes, because in a certain way the Olympics aren't difficult to prepare for from a security standpoint, in that you know which venues need to be protected on which days.
Yep.
So that where it's a different issue is, I would say, what you would call soft targets. What happened in Atlanta, the athletes were fine, but a bomb was set off in Centennial Park, which anybody could walk into. So I would say if I were a spectator, I would be a little more concerned. If I were hanging around Constitution Square at night or Ammonia Square or the docks out of Piraeus, which are much more difficult to protect, that would be the issue. You don't have to kill an athlete to make a point at the Olympics. You can do it in a crowded restaurant downtown.
Trent Gigax, I think we've got you back there. You were about to describe this cooperation between U.S. forces and, was it Spanish forces in Shield of Hercules?
No.
Greek, I'm sorry?
Greek, sure. Yeah, it was American and Greek forces that are participating in a bunch of scenarios, like hostage scenarios, chemical weapons attacks, transportation disasters like Madrid saw. And this is an incredibly tightly held exercise, too, because you any indication, even if it's a photograph of what they're doing, the security forces feel like they would be tipping their hand to the terrorists.
John Powers, step way back with us for a second here to look at this whole issue of readiness. I was in Athens, a year and a half ago or so now, and I have to say, it's a beautiful new airport they've got there. The subway system is out of sight. It's just sparkling, gorgeous. And yet, we continue to read stories about this facility and that and this connection and that are not ready. Is Athens where it needs to be 5 months before the start of the Games, or do we have a problem here?
Well, you've got a problem with certain areas. For example, will you be able to have track and field at the stadium? Yes. Will it be a roof on it? Probably not. That is the issue. When the IOC was by for their most recent visit, the president, Jacques Raga, said, focus on the core business of the Games, which basically don't worry about a roof. Make sure that the coastal tramway is fixed. Make sure that
to get the athletes where they need to go,
exactly.
And the spectators where they need to go.
Yeah, spectators, light rail. I mean, this is an ancient city. It is gridlocked on the best of times. The problem now is, how do you move all these people around the town? unless these people movers that were supposed to have been finished are finished. The Greek authorities have said from day one, don't worry, it'll all be set. The problem is you've got no wiggle room now. If there's a problem and you find out about it on the 1st of August, how do you fix a system or a major transportation cog that hasn't been finished?
What are the other unfinished areas? I was reading recently they had hoped to run a marathon along the historic, at least legendary, path of the marathon, from Marathon to Athens, I guess, or the other way. You tell me, I'm not sure. But but the roads hadn't been repaved widened. So what else? The velodrome, no roof. Does that matter? Can you do bicycling without a roof?
Yeah, except not at high noon and not when it rains. So I think that is part of the problem here, is that from what I understand, the venues that have been finished are quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is what they like to do is 1 year in advance have all these things tested.
Yeah.
So if you have a problem, you know it. You don't want to find out late. And this is what now the IOC doesn't want to publicly say, we've got a big problem here. It's too late to move the games. They will happen. And relatively speaking, if you've ever seen the Pan American Games and see Santo Domingo trying to get this thing done on short notice, these are relatively small problems. I've never been to a games that did not come off. I have been to a few where they were still painting things in the morning.
Right. Is there any fear that any particular event might not happen because of unfinished facilities? Or do you expect that everything will go on?
Oh, yes. I think everything will be finished. And from everything I have seen, the events that have been, the venues that have been finished are quite nice. The Athletes Village is gorgeous. If you can imagine an all-marble Club Med, that is wonderful. And I think the new government has made it their major priority to make sure that these things happen.
Well, there's talk of some events even happening right down in central historic Athens, in the old city, within a view of the Acropolis and Parthenon. The shot put or something may go on down there. I don't have all this going on. And yet people talk about Athens being, and again, it's horrible to contemplate these things, but a sniper's dream because it's set in a kind of a basin, a bowl, a valley of a city.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things, for example, they wanted to use all of the ancient sites as backdrops for events. For example, the cycling road race will happen around the ancient part of the city. They'll use the 1896 stadium for archery. The marathon will finish there. I think they were talking about going up to Olympia for the shot put. They want to use these things. But again, downtown Athens is very crowded. It's hard to monitor. And I think it would be a tragedy if they weren't able to hold the events downtown because they couldn't keep them very secure. But you know, these are things. One thing about the games, they come together very quickly in the final month. And you can almost plot on a graph all this angst that happens. They're not ready yet. Where's the snow? You know? but literally, they don't have a day to lose.
John, remind us of the history here. When were the Olympics originally held in Greece, and why and how were they revived in 1896 in Greece?
Well, Baron de Coubertin, basically, he was the father of the modern games. One of the ideas was the Olympics brought people together in peace. As a matter of fact, in the ancient times, wars were suspended so the games could be held. And the games were brought back to where they were born in 1896. As a matter of fact, one of the ironies here is the Greeks had hoped to hold the Centennial Games in 1996 in Athens, and the reason they didn't get them was very much for the reason that people are now concerned they couldn't build the infrastructure in time. So the spirit of the games is still very much alive. And one of the reasons why they'd always hoped and thought that terrorists wouldn't hit the games was that they were held in such high esteem around the world that the disapprobation that you would get for a terrorist attack would ruin any impact you'd hoped to have. Now, these days, it doesn't appear as though the international terrorists care much about that. They don't care about social disapprobation.
They've got plenty of it, and it's not beyond beyond imagining at all. Trent Geekax, the United States there with troops on the ground, why such a heavy U.S. involvement? The U.S. has not always had close relations with the Greek government. Why the direct involvement of the U.S. military?
Well, yeah, you're right. In fact, the U.S. and the Greeks have had differences on foreign policy. For instance, the Greeks didn't support the war in Afghanistan or in Iraq, and that has lended a bit of naivete to the public in Greece. They had 150,000 some people protest in front of the U.S. embassy before the war in Iraq began. or as it was beginning. So that is one problem that they're dealing with. They'll have a bit of a public relations campaign to get people more aware, in fact, of possible terrorism in the midst.
We'll come back and look at other challenges here, up to and including what kind of reception U.S. athletes are going to get at an Olympics on European soil. We're talking about the Summer Olympics in Athens and the state of Olympic readiness. Are the 04 Summer Olympics on your radar yet? In ancient times, warriors put down their weapons for the Olympics. Do you think they will this time? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Summer Olympics in Athens and the state of Olympic readiness. I'm joined in the studio tonight by John Powers, sports reporter for the Boston Globe. He's covered the Olympics since 1976. And from Berkeley, California, by Trent Gigax. He's a correspondent for Newsweek magazine who's been covering security there. You can join this conversation as well. Can you imagine a nearly billion-dollar bill for Olympic security? Can any amount of money assure security in Athens this summer? How tempting a target will Athens be for terrorists? How does the blast in Madrid echo in Greece this year? And will the Greeks be ready for the games? Will the cement be dry? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined right now from Colorado Springs, Colorado, by Larry Boondorf. He's Chief Security Officer of the U.S. Olympic Committee. Good evening and welcome, Larry Boondorf.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us, Larry. How does it look to you? There's a lot of talk about security there this summer. What's the prospect? Are you feeling confident that things are in order in Athens and the U.S. team is going to be safe and able to compete without without problems?
I think that that the Greeks are moving in the right direction, and obviously they're going through some trials, and I think that's the way you fill in the holes, if there are any. And they have reached out for the other countries to assist them. I they're giving a very concentrated effort towards making this a good Games.
Larry, can you describe to us anything about the security measures that will be taken for the U.S. team in Athens this summer and whether they are like or unlike previous security measures in Salt Lake City and Sydney elsewhere?
Well, obviously, you know, the world has changed since Sydney and after Salt Lake City. We had an increase in security in Salt Lake City, but now we're in a foreign country, so the operation has to change a little bit. We have to have the cooperation of the Greeks. I think that that we are moving in the right direction, and I believe that that the support that's being given and the numbers that they're going to put on the street will create a good, safe, and secure environment.
And will U.S. athletes be depending on Greek security personnel for their security or on American security personnel?
The authority for the security falls with the Greeks. You know, I mean, they have the arrest powers. They have the they're responsible for enforcing the laws of Greece. We hope to have some of our personnel assisting them in a liaison role, and and kind of work in cooperation with the Greeks.
And Larry, as Chief Security Officer for the U.S. Olympic Committee, are you coordinating with the Shield of Hercules exercises going on in the Aegean Sea this week? Is that part of your purview?
I'll be going over there shortly to catch the last part of it. Yes, you know, just to kind of give the National Olympic Committee's point of view of a very large team.
Trent Gigax, you've written so recently on security here. You've got Larry Boondorf right on the telephone with us. What question comes to your mind for the guy who's in charge of security for the U.S. committee?
Well, he's sort of answered the question as to whether armed security will be with the U.S. athletes. I believe that American security cannot carry weapons, and that's up to the Greeks. Is that correct?
I believe that's probably, Trent, that probably is true. It will be more of a liaison role, right? I really don't know if there will be an allowance for weapons to be carried by the partners or if that will not come true. I don't know.
But clearly, Trent, what we have here is a prospect of a military force standing offshore, I guess. That's what this Shield of Hercules must be about. And there's also the invitation to NATO members to have naval vessels offshore as well. Isn't that right, Trent?
That's right. And there's also a seven-member, seven-country committee that's going to be helping with security as well, in addition to NATO countries like Russia's involved. They are helping with things like the chemical and biological defense, because the Greeks don't have that sort of capability. But, I mean, you have the Greeks are in a bit of a bind in that they can't allow every country to just come and, you know, bring their forces into Greece, because the Greeks are a very proud people who don't want to be looked upon as unable to protect themselves and to be virtually occupied by other countries. Mm.
Larry Bundorf, what about the experience of the athletes themselves? Have you seen security measures interfere with their athletic performance? Do you expect that it could or will this summer in Athens?
No, our athletes are pretty well briefed prior to coming to Greece, and while they are in Greece, they're very familiar with the procedures that have to be in place. They come focused on what they've come to do, win the gold medal, and leave the rest of it to the experts in that area.
Got it. Larry Bundorf, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Great to have you. Good luck in Athens. Larry Bundorf is Chief Security Officer for the U.S. Olympic Committee. Let's turn to our callers. Iraklis is calling from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Hi, Iraklis. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm actually from Athens, and I was going to disagree with your Berkeley commentator that people are going to be happy that there's going to be policemen with a submachine gun every 10 meters. Greeks have a strong sense of a police state not being there at watching their every step, and there has been a lot of people that have voiced concerns over all the foreign powers that are supposedly going to be in Athens. Personally, I'm very happy that Greeks have overcome this concern, have invited the seven-member coalition of nations to help, including the Israelis and the French and the British.
Iraklis, when you look at the situation in Athens and anticipate the Olympic Games this summer, how big a concern is security to you? How vulnerable does all this look?
I think that we are going to do a very good job with security, especially given the momentous budget assigned to it. I'm concerned about the issues you referred to earlier, the roof and the athletes, the venues being ready. So I don't think security is a concern of mine and of many Greek people. I think we're going to do a good job at it.
Great. So let the cement be dry, and you're hopeful that the security will tick right along. Iraklis, thanks for your call. John Powers, remind us, of course, of Munich, what happened there. That has to be on everyone's mind in any Olympic summer, and perhaps especially this summer with 2001 not so far behind us.
Well, exactly. I did a story a couple of years ago on the anniversary of the Munich massacre. And what was interesting is how the Germans went out of their way that year to have very little security, because the feeling was that they did not want people thinking that this was a return to the days of the Third Reich, that Germany was a police state, that
right.
It was Nazi. So they went out of their way to be open and welcoming walk right in.
Right.
I noticed a very different atmosphere in 1976 for the first time. There were metal detectors at the Olympic Games, and even then it was fairly low security. I think one of the problems that people have at Olympic Games is seeing people with submachine guns, seeing metal detectors, seeing attack dogs tends to alter the perception that this is a great peaceful enterprise. So I think what you try to do is have subtle security. The idea is there is stuff you will see, and then there is much you will not see. And what a lot of the real security experts will say is you may only see – it'll be like an iceberg. You'll see very, very visible stuff, but there'll be an awful lot of stuff we're doing, motion sensors, satellites, things like that, that you won't see. I think very often there is great fear because it does look like a terrorist smorgasbord.
Yeah.
Any country you want to hit is going to be – there will be 200 countries at the Olympic
Games.
Take your pick. But I think also it is an enormous spotlight, and to terrorize the Olympic Games carries such a global disapprobation. It works against what you're trying to achieve. However, as we've seen since 9/11 and as we even saw last week, many terrorist groups don't care how they are viewed by the rest of the world. And that is a thing that has changed since 1972.
John, broaden the lens a little bit here for us and look at the reception that the U.S. team is likely to receive in Athens this summer. We've seen at some games recently some pretty tough heckling of American teams. There was the U.S. soccer team, which is not going to make it to Greece, but I guess that their game was against Mexico. You had heckling and booing during
Osama was being chanted.
The U.S. national anthem had whistles blowing.
Yep.
Mexicans chanting Osama at the U.S. team. Now, these Olympic Games will be in Europe, and after a reform which may reserve fewer seats for fat cats and more for ordinary people. I saw a report late last year that U.S. athletes were going to be advised not to wear red, white, and blue or USA stuff. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, that tends to happen any time there are tensions about the U.S., which rise and fall with the times. American athletes have been told, cool it, don't wear your red, white, and blue stuff out, don't go out as a pack.
You're out on the town.
Right, and I think that is part. But generally, I've talked to U.S. athletes from this winter. I mean, clearly, U.S. athletes are around the world 12 months a year. And they said they have been treated well, that the average spectator draws a distinction between America and Americans. And I think what was interesting about the U.S. soccer team, they said this is the first time they weren't cheering about our mothers. They were cheering about Osama.
Right.
U.S. teams historically have been booed, whistled, hooted south of the border. Almost any time you go with a U.S. soccer team down there, U.S. baseball team, U.S. volleyball team.
Just in Mexico or on into Latin America?
Basically in Latin America. Mm-hmm. I've been in Argentina with the teams, with Venezuela, in Guatemala.
So you see that as regional, not
that's
global.
Regional. Well, there was a big Uncle Sam issue, yeah. And given the history in the region, the U.S. soccer team said the worst hooting they heard last year was in France.
The worst hooting was in France. Well,
because this was when the Americans weren't very happy with the French, and the French were kind of returning the favor.
Yeah.
But U.S. athletes, and this is what's interesting about here, most of them went to college. Heavy, heavy rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the people from Michigan said, you want a hatred? Go to Columbus.
Right.
When we play Ohio State, right. You'll see hatred.
You want to hear what comes raining down
so
there.
So I think they are used to being booed, hooted. They take it as part of the game. They don't take it personally. Will it happen over the summer? It depends what the mood is then.
Yeah.
It's amazing how the mood changed in sympathy towards the U.S. after 9/11 and yeah. then changed back. Mm. Who knows what it'll be like in August.
Trent, your Newsweek staff's been doing a lot of reporting. What are you anticipating on that front, the reception that U.S. athletes are likely to find in Athens?
I don't see there being a huge concern about the local Athenians booing them or harassing them. They have been told not to be real high profile. But I got to disagree with the caller from Wellesley who said that he sort of demonstrated the naivete that I saw in Greece among people there who think that they don't have anything to worry about because they're not friends of the U.S. I mean, this is, they've got 10,000, nearly 10,000 Chechens who live in Greece, and they're certainly no friends of Russia. In the old days you had states like Syria that were sponsoring terrorism. Now you've got little groups that look at this as an East versus West matter. They want to, kick up a world war. They don't care what people in the West think of what they do as evil or bad. They're probably eyeing something like the Acropolis, where you have the Parthenon, a symbol of Western thought. So I just wanted to.
So don't be complacent. Keep all the corners nailed down. Jim is calling from Burlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm concerned about the queries that the press continually makes into the security surrounding the athletes. I have a daughter who is an experienced international competitor and who is likely to be there in August.
Good for you.
And in our experience, frankly, the U.S. Olympic Committee and the U.S. government does a great job of protecting these athletes, of briefing them and making sure they understand the environment they're going into. And that I think that any efforts to disclose or to seek out information about the security for these athletes is really detrimental to their safety.
So, Jim, are you saying you think it's better just put it away, take care of it, and don't talk about it?
I think that, that the less people understand, I mean, the U.S. press has a tendency to want to know to the nth detail what's going on, and the problem is that that's like opening up the book and disclosing to the terrorist groups what we're going to do to protect our athletes. And I find that counterproductive. In fact, I resent it as a parent. I think that represents more danger to the kids, to the young people that are participating in these games than anything else going on.
As a parent of a potential contender, I can absolutely understand what you must be feeling there. John Powers, how about it? Is this an area, is this one of those moments where the press pays too much attention to dark possibilities and ought to just leave it to the experts and butt out?
Well, I think had nothing been going on in the world, it might be, an inappropriate question. Now it is not. There was an explosion in Atlanta. You did have Munich. You had 9/11. You have had Madrid. This is a normal question. I think anybody would be concerned. And again, this is not just about the athletes. There will be a million plus spectators mm-hmm. going there also. Mm-hmm. Many of them, by the way, staying in boats, staying on islands. This is an event for the world. The athletes are at its center, but they are not the only people there. And I think anybody, I am concerned, I have a number of colleagues nationwide who say, not me, baby, I'm not going to Athens this time at all.
Journalists.
Yeah, you bet. This has been, I have never covered an Olympic Games where there was more concern by my colleagues about whether they'd be safe over there or not.
Wow. John, you must have interacted with lots of families of Olympic athletes. Jim is one calling from Burlington. This can't be fun to have this association with what's been a bright and shining aspect of their lives, their children's lives. No one wants to make this association of sport and terror.
Well, that's right. And I think what's interesting about the Olympics is that when you get inside the fence, as they always say,
yeah.
it's a very different world. There is no world outside of that world. The athletes get together wonderfully. It was very interesting, for example, I don't know if you've seen the movie about the 1980 Olympic hockey team called Miracle.
Yeah.
There was actually some byplay between U.S. and Russian athletes there.
Byplay meaning?
They would kind of talk to each other. I mean, it wasn't massive, but there is interplay between the athletes that we don't see, and that is the Olympics at their best. But they do not happen inside a cocoon. And I think that is why the questions about security, especially if the games are not being held in Greece, it might be different. I wasn't hearing this in Sydney. Of course, that was pre-9/11.
Right.
But Greece is in the middle of a number of hotbed areas.
What do you know about Middle Eastern teams competing? Will there be an Iraqi Olympic team?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there will be an Iraqi team. It was just reinstated. Uday Hussein ran it
right.
up until recently. As a matter of fact, the Iraqi athletes, some of them will be training in the U.S., they have identified a couple of dozen who they think might be Olympic level.
And Trent Gigax, I got to ask you, your headline is security. Anything is a target in Newsweek. We've got a parent of a potential Olympian saying, please, let's lay off that, guys. What do you think?
Well, I understand the impulse. But what we do is we hopefully are showing the blind spots that security officials may not even know they have. You know, the more questions you ask, the more thorough the coverage is my thought. And there are blind spots. You know, as we talked about, the soft targets with McDonald's and Starbucks or any sort of symbol of America. So I think we're hopefully doing a job of making things safer.
Well, sadly, I guess it's no mystery how these things can work. We're talking tonight about the Summer Olympics in Athens and the state of Olympic readiness. How do you expect American athletes will be treated in Athens? Do you expect the world to be ready to pause for the beauty of pure sport this summer? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Summer Olympics in Athens and the state of Olympic readiness. I'm joined in the studio tonight by John Powers, sports reporter for the Boston Globe, been covering Olympics since 1976, and from Berkeley, California, by Trent Gigax, correspondent for Newsweek magazine. You can join our conversation tonight. Will the Greeks be ready for the Games? Will the cement be dry? Is the world ready to pause for the beauty of pure sport? Can we leave politics behind and take a time out for a little friendly global competition at the Summer Olympics 2004. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined now from Colorado Springs by Sarah McMahon. She's a women's freestyle wrestler. She's won the silver in the World Championships just last year. Good evening and welcome, Sarah McMahon.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Sarah, this is a brand new event to the Olympics, as I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the first time women's wrestling has been added.
How long have you been wrestling, Sarah?
I've been wrestling 10 years.
And are you headed to the Olympics for sure?
No, we still have our trials in May, but I am the person who qualified our weight for the Olympics.
So if you're qualified, what does that mean exactly if you still have tryouts?
I actually qualified. We have to qualify to make sure our weight class can go from, there's only 12 countries that can go, and so they go through selection processes on who can actually even qualify to go to the Olympics. So I qualified my weight class, and now whoever wins my weight class on these upcoming trials,
right,
knock on wood, I hope is me, but then that person, since I qualified the United States to have a spot there.
That's terrific, and we wish you well with it. Sarah, what do you think of the whole political context around the Olympics? As an athlete who's in training, who still has some hurdles to get over to get there, are you even thinking about any of that?
Well, I feel pretty secure with the way that security has handled things in the past. I've competed under, you know, strenuous circumstances. We competed in world championships after 9/11 in Bulgaria, and security, they briefed us, and I mean, that went through without a hitch, and I know that there was a lot of conflict, but honestly, I've been to Greece 3 times and twice for competition, and I've never been treated in anything but kindness and total respect from everyone I've encountered there, so it makes me rest a little easier.
That's terrific, and what about the facilities in Athens? You've had a glimpse of what's going on there. How's it look to you, Sarah?
It still looks like they have things that they need to, you know, the bugs to work out and the little finishing touches. But as far as the way that the security ran things, I mean, it was a tight ship. You know, like they ran things very efficiently and they were communicating with each other a lot. And so, like, the building only has, like, a small amount that it needs to still finish. But I think the facility and the workers were great.
And when you talk with other athletes about heading to Athens, are they expecting to see construction cranes still looming over the sites, or are people expecting that one way or another Athens will pull it together in time for the games?
I think that we're all we're all skeptical, you know, like we don't know, because we went there for an Olympic preparatory event, and they're like, you see this mound of dirt? Well, there's going to be your building there, and we were all like, oh my Lord, they're so behind. But they just explained to us that it costs more to actually maintain the building than to just slow down its building and have it finished just right on time. So, I mean, definitely we hope that it will be completely finished, but I don't think that anything is going to disrupt our focus. I mean, that's what we're trained for. So
that's great. Sarah, just take us straight into your sport for a minute. Let's leave all the rest of this aside. What's your training regimen like in preparation for the Olympic competition?
We train twice a day, like for roughly 2 hours a day. I mean, 2 hours each practice. And Monday through Friday and Saturday we have a practice, and Sunday we have off. And then we have different tournaments we go to overseas. We have different tours that we go on, stay for a week. And right now it's really just, at this point, it's really beating us up right now so we can start our peak cycle.
And what's your weight bracket, Sarah? What bracket do you wrestle in?
I wrestle it. It's 63 kilos, but it's actually 138 pounds.
Okay. And what's... what's the secret of being successful in wrestling?
I think there's a lot of components that that can make different people successful. But mine, I think, is pretty strong, and like I have a strong belief in myself. Just believing that I can do things and that I can beat everybody. I mean, like it. I found out this through all of my practices, and I think that it makes. I think it intimidates some of my competitors.
That's good. And you've been doing it for 10 years. How old are you now, Sarah?
I'm 23.
Wow. So you've got a lot of experience under your belt. We're grateful to you for joining us, and we wish you the absolute best of luck on the way to Athens and once you get there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Sarah McMahon, women's freestyle wrestlers. This event will be held for the first time in Athens this summer. She joined us from Colorado Springs, Colorado. John Powers, take us just a little bit into the U.S. team that it's going to Athens this year. What are the strong suits? What's not so strong? How does the U.S. look?
Well, I think one of the interesting things is that one of the the positive fallouts for the U.S. of the New World Order of the 90s was the breakup of the Soviet Union and the merger of East and West Germany, mm-hmm. which basically got rid of the old East German machine, has put the Americans up at the top of the table. So what has been lost in all of this talk, and also as part of the U.S. Olympic Committee scandal last year right. among the top officers, was the Americans will have a very, very strong team in Athens.
So you're saying the medal count, is there no question now it's going to go to the United States?
It's pretty
close. With the Soviet Union and East Germany off the...
Yes. U.S. basically, one of the things that has helped, as more women's sports have been added to the program, mm-hmm. the Americans now pour more money into women's sports than probably any country with the possible exception of China.
And with many years of Title IX behind
exactly.
us, there's a base
that
to work
is what
from.
You're seeing. Anything they give a scholarship for in college, America now does very well at. If you look at, for example, women's basketball, women's soccer, track and field, swimming, gymnastics, those sports all do very well. I would say if there's one single story this summer, Michael Phelps is a U.S. swimmer mm-hmm. Who is bidding to be the next Mark Spitz, maybe even more so. Mark Spitz, of course, won 7 gold medals in 1972. Michael is actually a better all-around swimmer. He swims more strokes. Theoretically, he could swim 9 events. In Athens. I doubt that will happen,
wow.
but he has been offered $1 million if he gets more than 7 medals or more than the 7 gold medals.
Offered that by a sponsor, by
yeah.
an advertiser?
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. So I think he will be a story. What is interesting is who is missing. The U.S. men's baseball team did not qualify.
Mm. Who did they lose out to?
Lost to Mexico.
A lot of big cheering going on in Mexico.
So they didn't make it. The U.S. men's soccer team did not make it. And what you're seeing, the U.S. basketball team, which is NBA stars, mm-hmm. This could be the year that they don't win. At the last World Championships held in Indianapolis, the yeah. Americans were sixth.
Sixth.
They're sending a better team this time. But I think the day when the Americans could show up with a dream team and take the medal by acclaim is certainly over.
John, so, how do you interpret that? Does it mean U.S. pro ball has diminished in quality? The rest of the world is stepping up, or they're not sending their top players? What's your
They didn't send
it?
All of their top players, but they sent enough that in most years that team would have won. But the fact is that pro basketball now, it's much more low scoring. It's individual, you know, in the paint, you know, in your face, mm-hmm. jamming. The quality of ball movement, of outside shooting. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world is catching up. Many foreign players now play at U.S. colleges. They hone the game well. They play a more attractive brand of ball in places like Brazil, in places like Italy, Spain, Greece, Lithuania. So I think the day when the Americans could automatically, they came very close to losing in Sydney last time. This could be the time.
Well, Trent Gigax, there's also been some issue around the Dream Team's accommodations in Athens, where exactly they're going to stay, and some security issues related to that.
Yeah, it's not just the Dream Team. The American officials have hedged, which I would have asked Larry about this, about where the U.S. athletes will stay. Initially, it was said that they would be staying in the Olympic Village.
You mean all U.S. athletes?
That's what my understanding was. And there's also talk of them staying on a boat in the bay. I don't know that it's been 100% determined and that there's been 100% commitment given by the U.S. team about where exactly the U.S. athletes will stay.
No kidding. John, have you heard anything on that front?
Well, I know generally what happens is it's left up to the individual federation teams to do what they want to. You know, no one has been told that you must stay in the village, mm-hmm. although with security being what it is, it's much more desirable. It's easier to protect you. But there's a long tradition, especially with USA Basketball, with some of the more visible athletes like the Carl Lewis's.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem with the Olympic Village is it goes 24 hours a day. There are always people who are partying.
It's not peaceful.
Mm-hmm. It's not peaceful. One of the reasons why the original Dream Team in Barcelona didn't stay there was they were always being bugged for autographs.
Right.
But I think clearly you would rather not stay at a luxury downtown hotel unless you were sure that you were going to be very secure there. So this may be a year where I think the USOC may say, think twice about staying outside the village.
Maybe get into that village. Let's get a couple more calls here. Chick is calling from Washington Island, Wisconsin. Hi, Chick. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I'm thinking, listening to the conversation, that maybe the future of the Olympics is at stake here. We're already committed to spending $1 billion on security, and I think participation is going to be down considerably. I don't think...
What kind of participation, Chick?
Well, from the public, you know, people who come to see the games. I don't mean the athletes themselves, but the people who spend money and indirectly pay for this. I don't think people, you know, want to see a machine gun every 10 meters. And we saw some civilian deaths in Iraq today, and mass transportation targets seem to be the favorites of Al-Qaeda. You know, we've just come through Madrid. We've been through Japan. And with the Olympic scandals, I think people are just going to say, I don't want to risk it.
Makes you worry about the whole enterprise. Chick, we've got it. John Powers, can you imagine that? I mean, the world has become a tough place. All kinds of events, even very ordinary daily events, have security concerns around them now. Is there a point at which the Olympics just run into a headroom, headwind, where there's just not enough global concord to pull them off? Or is the desire so strong and the maybe economic issues around this so strong that people are always going to be determined to do it?
It's still a pretty strong concept, I think. People like the idea of Olympism. As a matter of fact, one thing that we have found is that when Olympic athletes are caught doping, it seems to be considered a much worse thing than if a major league ball player is, because they're held to a higher standard.
It's destructive to an ideal when people hear
right. that. Right. And I think if you look at what happened with the 1980 Olympic hockey team, they were revered by Americans and still are for what they said about America. So those things, I think that's very powerful. Is it getting to the point where cities may not want to bid anymore because it's such a hassle? It could be. However, you still got 10 or 12 cities that want to host these all the time. I remind you, back in 1984, only two cities were bidding for the Olympic Games. L.A. was one, and Tehran, Iran, with the Shah of Iran, was the other.
And now there's a fierce competition. And whatever happens, Athens is going to have an enormous facelift as a result of this.
Well, and that is the thing here,
a very handsome one.
That when you host the Games, you're on the map. And I think what it is important to Athens, this is what's really important, why I think they will come off well. If they don't do it, that people say, see, it's a second-and-a-half world country. They really aren't.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, they just couldn't do it. So Greek pride. I would not underestimate Greek pride.
We won't do that. Let's get one more call tonight. Larry is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to share a couple of my experiences. I published a track and field magazine. In 1995, I was in Gothenburg, Sweden for the World Championships.
Yeah.
And the Swedish security forces have these lovely powder blue uniforms, and they carry these little deceptive little Glock submachine guns, which are quite small. And they were following the American press no matter where we went for 2 weeks. We would be in an Irish bar in Sweden, yes, and having a beverage, and they'd be waving at us.
So it's not the first time you've seen security at the Olympics, Larry.
You see them all the time. In Sweden, and they did it the way that worked for their culture. As we left the country, they told us there had been some threats against the American press, but they didn't want to scare us, and they wanted us to enjoy our visit to Sweden. And I think what you're going to see in Athens is people are very proud of their country. They're going to do the best they can. I feel reassured that they've talked to NATO, they've talked to some other groups. No matter how much planning, if someone wants to get something done, they can do it. But most people in the world, I really believe, still believe in the Olympic ideal. No. And quite frankly, in Europe, American athletes, at least in track and field, are like rock stars. They are the favorites, and people really enjoy them. And so I think that's a positive as well. Will there be some anti-American feelings? Of course. But I think all in all, when you go into the stadium and you see over 200 flags hanging up around the stadium, and you see people sitting next to you from Ethiopia and from Italy and from the Czech Republic, it's really exciting. You forget about everything else.
Larry, we're just about out of time, but we thank you for that image, because, John Powers, that really is what brings people to these Olympic Games in such huge numbers, to watch and watch on television those great athletes and that spirit of the world being together. Let's hope it's there this summer.
Exactly. Thank you.
John Powers, sports reporter for the Boston Globe, thanks a lot for being with us tonight. In Berkeley, California, Trent Gigax, correspondent for Newsweek magazine, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Julie Jupp, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skoog. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.